afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And today is Friday, and the second and third segment today, I'm pleased to have James Corbett interview that was previously recorded Wednesday evening, as we do every other week. And I do so enjoy spending time with James Corbett on that evening. It's just a bundle of information. He does some great investigative reports. And make sure you go to his website, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. Some interviews, but he does a fantastic job. We will have that for the second and third segment today. So let's get started. It's Friday, September 7th, 2018. Some pressure on gold today. We had the job report came out strong. Wages was a little strong. So we're going to talk about that here in the first 20 minutes of the program today. But first, we have gold a little pressure down. $3.40 today in the New York spot price after market at $11.97.10. Silver's been struggling all day, but we had a big drop, 14.04 at the opening. It came back strong, holding the $14.24 all day long. So, you know, someone might think, well, big deal, but it really is a big deal because it did hold at that level with a lot of pressure on it today. I didn't see what the dollar index did. We'll go over that here in just a bit, but obviously it was higher as gold was lower. Platinum was down $11 today at $785. Palladium was up $5 at $986. The USDX today was up 0.35 at 95.39. Crude oil today was up 0.07 at 67.84. And the paper markets today, you know, there was pressure early on. They clawed themselves back to. The Dow was down 79 points at 25,916. The NASDAQ was down 20 points at 7,902. The S&P was down 6 at 2,871. The 10-year yield today, 2.94%, up 0.06. It's interesting. And after such great reports, the euro, I guess after good reports, you would see that on the 10-year yield. The euro was 116. Asian markets, Germany was the only one that was really up 0.04%, up a lousy 4.38 points. So, but it was an up day. It was green, and everybody can rejoice. But the rest of the Asian and London markets had pressure. The emotion driving the market with all these great reports coming out about our economy, you'd think that it'd be a little bit stronger, thinking that the market's going to be going higher, but we have the we're back in neutral territory at the number 52. So that's dropped quite a bit from a week ago. Pressure on Bitcoin once again today, just a little bit, but it's a few points, and it's holding that 6,400 level at 6,412. Had calls all day long. I should thank these folks for releasing particular information. I'm going to do this now because I always tend to run out of time, and I don't want to run out of time before I talk to you about this. On Wednesday, and I guess it was, I don't know how many days, there were several websites and so forth, radio programs that was talking about the 2018 American Silver Eagle, that the bullion coins were temporarily sold out from the mint. They say due to recent increased demand, the United States Mint was temporarily sold out of its inventories of the 2018 American Silver Eagles. All orders received prior to this communication shall be honored and settled according to pre-agreed upon value date arrangements. And the U.S. Mint is in the process of producing additional 2018 American Silver Eagle bullion coins, and we will make these coins available for sale shortly. So I got calls anywhere from, you know, they stopped production of the Silver Eagles, the mint ran out of silver, you know, all kinds of, you know, distorted reasons why this is occurring. Now you're going to get the truth. The truth isn't nearly as exciting as, you know, some of those reasons and so forth. And that's, you know, that's the whole point. But what happened was, and I can't remember the exact time, it was a year ago maybe, or the beginning of this year. The Silver Eagles are usually sold to wholesale dealers. There's a few of them. There's, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 of them that buy directly from the mint. And usually they are on an allotment based on their average of purchases that they tend to make with the U.S. Mint. They eliminated the allotment. And whenever the mint eliminates these allotments, they get themselves in this trouble. It's happened before. It's going to happen again. And what happens when they take these allotments off to these wholesale dealers, they can go in there and buy whatever they want. Whenever, you know, and there's no restrictions on them. The past year, I'd say the past year, when the pressure of silver, when the price of silver began to drop, there's been a lot of secondary market Silver Eagles coming online. So people sell silver back into the market, and these are green boxes of maybe 2015 Silver Eagles that have never been opened, or maybe they're 2013s, maybe they could even be 2016s or 20, you know, whatever, but they're backdated Silver Eagles in their green boxes, still strapped with the U.S. Mint, and they sold at a lower price. So when we're selling Silver Eagles and people are buying boxes of Silver Eagles, I give them the option. Do you want the current year at this price, or do you, we can get you backdated ones, and this is the price. So you were saving, there was probably about a 30, 40, 50 cent savings per coin, which is significant when you're buying multiple boxes of Silver Eagles. So everybody was selling these backdated Silver Eagles. Well, secondary markets do dry up, and that's exactly what happened. So we had to switch to 2018s, and probably about the backdated Silver Eagles started drying up maybe a month ago. And if you look at the U.S. Mint, the bullion, their record of sales, it was a very weak year for Silver Eagles. So they were just running out their inventory. But then, bam, in August, well, actually, in July, you started to see the increase of purchasing directly from the mint. From June to July, they about doubled. In July, you had 885,000 Silver Eagles sold. On August, it went from 885,000 to 1.5 million. For the month of September, we're already at a little over a million. So when you look at what we've done in this first week of September, now this is the U.S. Mint selling a million Silver Eagles from a very slow year. They have to go back and supply their inventory, and this is what happened. It doesn't have anything to do with the, you know, the no silver and so forth, or any of the other stories that you might heard. It's just like a grocery store. If you have an impending hurricane or tornado or snowstorm, people all go to the grocery store, they buy up all the product, and then it takes a couple days for the grocery store to, you know, restock those shelves. Same thing with the U.S. Mint. Now, it did put a little bit of delay on Silver Eagles as of, you know, right before the program. Silver Eagles, now I have Silver Eagles coming in. So these are all bought prior to this week. But if you were buying a box of Silver Eagles today of 2018s, and you sent me a bank wire that I received on Monday, you would have your Silver Eagles shipped to you a week from today. They're about a week out. When Silver Eagles are about a week out, nobody even really notices any delays in shippings, unless, of course, you know, you send me bank wires and I have to ship you tomorrow and I have to tell you, well, they're not going to be available till Friday. If the buying keeps up with these low prices that we've seen, yeah, we might see, you know, maybe that 1 week go into 2 weeks. But the problem is, what happens is the wholesalers and a lot of dealers like to slap on premiums. to your Silver Eagles. I keep my prices the same unless my supplier begins to charge me more. Then I usually adjust my price with his increase. I don't increase my price. My prices always stay the same. But the final price is adjusted to wholesale. So that's what's going on in the Silver Eagle market. And so we've had a great month in September. I don't know. The U.S. Mint, they're making their Silver Eagles of 2018 as I'm doing this program right now on Friday. And so we'll have to see. Now, does it mean that we can't have problems? If you start seeing the price of silver start jumping and more people come into the market, yeah, it could put, additional pressures on it. But that's something we don't know now until it actually happens. And also, usually by the end of October, perhaps, maybe the beginning of November, we will have the date when the U.S. Mint will stop producing 2018s in order to begin their 2019 production of the Silver and Gold Eagles. So we don't have that date yet. That hasn't been released yet. And usually during that time, there's also a little bit of delay. Normally, we can start locking in those prices for the 2019 somewhere in December. You know, once we get the okay from the Mint, then we can start locking in prices. Although the future years are never released prior to January. So that's why it's very important if you want to lock in 2019 Silver Eagles with a dealer, make sure you know who they are because they're going to be having your money for a month. And people get themselves in trouble. That's why you build relationships. That's why I encourage relationships like with Discount Gold and Silver because you know if you send me your funds, you know you're going to get your product, period. No ands, if buts about it. And that's what's so important. So be careful. And particularly if you're not to say there's online buying companies are not going to give you your product, but you just have to be very careful when you're buying from people you don't know. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188 if you have any questions about what I was just talking about, the 2018s. And we'll keep selling Silver Eagles and providing you the truth like we always do. And I do have a silver coin special. Now, I often tell you when I receive bags of 90% silver, we count them. The $25 face value of the 90% silver bags that we've been selling, we count them here. When we count them, we pull them out. We pull out all the worn coins. We always make sure that the dates are, easily seen and, they're decent, And after a while, I get quite a collection of these worn coins. Most of them are the walking libs because they were circulated the most. So I have a bunch of them and I'm willing to sell those all at spot price of silver today. You do have to pay shipping. We're counting them up today. So I'm not quite sure how much I'm going to have. I usually don't have a whole lot, but it's been accumulating and it gets heavy after a while. There's 50-cent pieces. There'll be quarters. I don't have any dimes. Well, there might be a few dimes, but not very many. But mainly 50-cent pieces, the walkers. And actually, there was a $40 face bag here of quarters. That's not so bad. So you guys get all that at spot price. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. If I can give you folks a deal out there, I will, but you have to give us a call. We've had U.S. job growth surges. We have had the annual wage gain, the largest since 2009. So job growth accelerated in August, which I don't think anybody was really surprised or shocked that it, that we got the numbers that we did. And this year, and again, that was spurred along with the administration's $1.5 trillion tax cut package. And this is where it gets interesting and what I thought was interesting, an increased government spending. So not only in addition to the $1.5 trillion tax cut package, but increased government spending. were shielding the economy from the trade tensions. And of course, which we have seen Washington and various other countries engaged in a tit-for-tat tariff. Some of those trade partners were the European Union, Canada, and Mexico, and of course the big one, China. So $1.4 trillion tax cut package and increased government spending. So now you know why they're not going to shut the government down. Now you know why the spending bill is going to be signed. I don't think anybody's going to really complain. As Mitch McConnell says, we've got nine separate bills they want to pass, and then after the elections, they'll get the wall in that last one and see if anybody has any problems. Non-farm payrolls today surged by, last month surged by 201,000, and that was actually boosted by hiring at construction sites, wholesalers, and professional and business services. This was reported by the Labor Department for the month of August. There were also gains in transportation and healthcare employment. The average hourly earnings increased 0.4% and 10 cents in August after rising 0.3% in July. That raised the annual increase in wages to 2.9% in August, and that was the largest gain since June of 2009. So we know what 2009 was, but this is inflationary. Should be good for gold. And so I think something else was a little bit interesting, a broader measure of unemployment, which includes people who want to work but have given up searching, and those who are working part-time because they cannot find a full-time employment, fell 0.1% to 7.4% in August, and that's the lowest level since April of 2001. And it's interesting, they did adjust the there were fewer jobs in June and July than previously recorded. Of course, that didn't get a whole lot of attention, did it? So they adjusted those 2 months to a lower scale. Wasn't that many. It was only 50,000. But 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you give us a call. We got that silver available. Calls are coming in. So we'll get that all set up for you. And James Corbett will be joining my talk with James. It's like a fireside chat with James Corbett that we do Wednesday evening. So that will begin after this break that is coming up here in just a few short minutes. And make sure, or seconds, and make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back right after these few short messages. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and yes, it is that time once again to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And a little info for James. He is the founder and editor of the Corbett Report that was started in 2007. He has millions of folks who have viewed his reports online, and in addition to the Corbett Report, James became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster. And you can visit James' website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com, and you can also request a complimentary issue of the International Forecaster by going to their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. Well, hello, James.
Well, hello. It's good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I hope all is well with you. And at the time of this recording, there was a 6.7 magnitude earthquake in Japan, the northern part of the island where the earthquake happened.
That's right. So, as you say, just a few hours ago, there was a 6.7. It's being reported, originally reported as a 7. Now it's 6.7, which might not sound like so much, considering some of the very big earthquakes we've seen recently, but it must have been close to the surface from the reports that I've seen. Even old hands at earthquakes, people who have lived through quite a few of them, are saying it's one of the worst they've ever felt. There were some building collapses. There's been wide power outages. So still a pretty hairy situation there. As you say, on the northernmost island of Hokkaido, especially in the major urban population center of Sapporo. So, unfortunately, another disaster to add to the growing list here in Japan. But for those who are wondering, and the people who send out their well wishes in the event of all of these types of events, I would just like them to know that myself and my family are not affected and are safe. So we're blessed and thankful for that, but still obviously thinking about the people who have been affected.
Well, you know, later on the program, I wanted to ask you about Fukushima, but I may as well ask you now since we're on earthquakes. And so now your government is now acknowledging for the first time that a worker at the plant that was destroyed by a 9.0 earthquake, I believe, that caused the tsunami has died from radiation exposure. This was the first death, I believe, although hundreds of deaths have been attributed to the chaos of the evacuations during the crisis. Tokyo Electric is facing a string of legal cases. They're seeking compensation over the disaster. Does this spell the end of peaceful nuclear power in Japan, James?
Unfortunately, no. And I say unfortunately because obviously we see that the destruction that can be wrought from this. But although there was a period of several years where every single reactor in the country was shut down, there have been some restarts in recent years, and nuclear power is back on track to become if not the only or the main supplier of energy here, certainly a significant one, as it has been for many decades, which, again, might seem surprising in the light of the historical fact that, of course, Japan is the only nation to have been nuclear bombed in wartime. They embraced nuclear power quite quickly as part of the 1950s Atoms for Peace U.S. drive to get nuclear energy out there to the various countries. Japan was high on that list, and in fact, it's now been exposed that some of the influential voices in the Japanese media during that time period who were promoting this idea were, oh yeah, on the CIA payroll, surprise, surprise. So there has been significant manipulation to make Japan into a country that would accept nuclear power. It's always been a somewhat uneasy relationship, and there has existed an anti-nuclear power movement of various sorts here, but obviously gaining quite a bit of momentum and steam after the Fukushima disaster. Although it hasn't really dislodged nuclear power, as I say, and nuclear reactors are still coming back online after their years of being down for safety checks and all of that kind of thing. And I think part of this is because it has become a very much ingrained pay-for-play type of relationship where lots of money is flooded into these types of towns that accept these nuclear power plants, obviously in return for things like, oh yeah, you might have a Fukushima on your hands. And so we see how that turns out, but it's a risk that a lot of mayors are willing to take to line their pockets and get some sweetheart deals for their town, and you know, the consequences be damned. So it is obviously this of course is just the only first official confirmed government admitted nuclear radiation death from Fukushima, but it is still a significant milestone and one that will obviously add to the discussion that takes place here. I'm not sure what the political ramifications of this will be, but we've seen in the past even some surprising things, like a former Japanese prime minister who was wildly popular for a number of years, Junichiro Koizumi, came out against the nuclear power industry in Japan. So some significant voices have been added to that list, but none that are in positions to actually do anything about it at this time.
Do you know how many plants Japan has, just for...
I believe the total number of reactors is over 50, I believe, and I can't remember how many have been turned back on at this point, but a lot of them are areas like Fukushima, Daiichi number one plant, which itself contains 4 reactors. So there's a lot of these plants that contain multiple reactors. So it's not 50 sites, but it's over, I believe, 50 reactors.
That radiation in the water, with my lack of knowledge of the proper terminology, that leaks into the water, into the oceans, do you believe that it has damaged the fish and the and has the radiation funneled found its way to our west coast?
Well, it's not a question of belief. Fukushima radiation has been detected off the California coast, and that specifically the telltale signature is cesium-134 and cesium-137, which are really the signatures of Fukushima because of their decay rate. There's no way that this could have been from, you know, decades old nuclear testing or anything like that. So that has been confirmed. People can look it up. The Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, which monitors these things. Now, they say, of course, that this is a radiation dose 1,000 times lower compared to getting a regular x-ray at the dentist. So take that into account. But then again, getting an x-ray in the dentist is something that happens for a second, as opposed to this type of exposure, which, depending where you live and what you're doing, could be much longer, more accumulated dosage. And, of course, the official WHO pronouncement, or at least the last official pronouncement, is that there is no safe dosage of radiation, that it is all accumulative, and every bit adds to potential accumulation of damage. So take all of that into account when you're talking about doses and risk and all of that. But at any rate, it isn't a question of belief. Fukushima radiation has absolutely been detected off the California coast and obviously in Fukushima Bay.
2 weeks ago, you exclaimed in the Corbett Report, let's party like it's 1999. No, better yet, let's party like it's 2018. And, of course, you were writing about the U.S. stock market bull run from 2009 to 2018 and having just surpassed the 1990-2000 bull run. And it has become the largest period of continually rising stocks in U.S. history. The last bull run was a big, fat, festering bubble inflated by hype and greed and irrational exuberance. And, of course, it came to a messy end that wiped out many people's savings. So Is it different this time?
That's what they want you to believe. But then again, that's what they want you to believe in the midst of every hype and every bubble. And let's all remember, take a moment to remember Jim Cramer talking about, oh, yeah, buy Lehman, what was the other bank? The Bear Stearns. It's fine. It's not going under. So we know that the mainstream often just plays into the hype bubbles and makes them even bigger, which is probably one of their main functions in these. So I specifically in that article that you're referring to, I specifically looked at a CNN article on this, which I thought was a particularly fascinating display of this type of market propaganda. It's called Market Milestone. This is the longest bull run in history. And it spends most of the time basically trying to convince the readers of that article that it is different this time. It's not really a bubble.
Is different.
Well, it's maybe not different in the good ways, but
you're
that's
right.
What they want you to believe. But they say, oh, it's not too much of a bubble. I mean, it's yeah, prices are rising, stocks are rising, but not inordinate amounts. And don't worry, guys, there's nothing really other than potential trade war or whatever. There's nothing on the horizon that could derail this. The thing that they kind of gesture towards in one part of one sentence is the unprecedented aid from the Federal Reserve, which helped to prop these markets up in the wake of Lehman and Bear Stearns. The thing that they don't note is that it was determined 2 years ago, 93% of the market rise from 2008 to 2016, 93% of that market rise is directly attributable to the Fed and its efforts to pump funny money into the economy over that time period. So, yeah, the Fed had something to do with it, and that should tell you something about the bubbleless nature of this bubble and the fact that it is, it has been propped up by liquid credit, funny money flowing from heaven. And now that they're turning that back and raising rates, it's going to be that process in reverse, and we are going to see this bull run coming to an end. It's only a question of when and how severely that train gets derailed.
Well, no one is talking about, oh, you hear people mention it once in a while in the mainstream financial news programs about the emerging markets, the currencies that are basically crashing and the possible contagion coming from that, starting from Turkey. And no, it's just like no one just, it's just, they're so focused here on what's happening in D.C. in the media that everything else, it just doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah.
And do you think that the crisis in Turkey and I think their currency, the lira, has fallen, 40%, 50% in the past several weeks, I believe?
Yep, exactly. So yes, specifically since May 2017, we've seen a collapse or crisis in the Argentinian peso and the Turkish lira. Now the Indian rupee is getting battered, getting to levels that it saw back in 2013 when there was the last rupee crisis. So definitely something happening there. And also Indonesia's rupiah has hit its worst level since the Asian financial crisis of 2 decades ago. There is an emerging market phenomenon that's happening here. It is starting to be called a contagion by BlackRock and other investment firms. So we are definitely heading into some very dangerous waters because, of course, this is all part and parcel of the global economic situation. One of the reasons that this is happening is because of the strengthening dollar and rising U.S. interest rates, which sucks up some of that funny money that had been flown around and thrown into some of these emerging markets. Now they're unwinding that trade and bringing it back to the U.S., and that is basically sucking all that money out and plunging these economies and currencies. Another aspect of that, of course, is the global trade tension, which is amplified by the fact that, as we're recording this, it's just a few hours from now, apparently, the next $200 billion in tariffs are set to be implemented in the United States against China. So that is obviously a key concern for the global economy generally, given the way that it is structured right now, being so heavily dependent on China as a manufacturing base for cheap goods. Whatever you think of that system, the unwinding of that system is going to cause some economic pain for a lot of people. And we're starting, I think we're getting the first glimpses of that in the emerging markets. It's already starting to feed back into the developed markets. In Asia, we've seen Japan and Hong Kong markets starting to go south, and we've seen China, Japan and Australia markets are heading south. Chinese and Hong Kong markets are the futures markets are showing sell-offs in the in equities. So we're starting to see that some of this emerging market contagion spreading towards some of the more developed economies. And I think this is all part and parcel, as I say, of a much larger picture. So it's not, you know, back in, 20, 30, 50 years ago, you could look at some collapse in some emerging market currency and just, oh, too bad for them. But now it's too bad for all of us because all of these problems interrelate with each other.
Are they going to hold it together till our election? Or will they intentionally unwind it prior to?
Yeah, very good question. I suppose it's which they are you referring to and which one has the upper hand, because I think there are certainly interests of that you would say that there are those who are interested in unseating the current power establishment in Washington would be motivated to make sure that there is some sort of crisis before the election. And, of course, the exact opposite motivation if you happen to be in the Trump administration and working for the Trump administration rather than writing anonymous op-eds in the New York Times calling for sabotage of that administration. So there's a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, I think some people are quite motivated to see some sort of collapse or crisis hitting U.S. shores before the election in order to influence what way that goes.
Well, President Trump took on Larry Kudlow as his economic advisor, and we all know Larry loves King Dollar. And we all know governments and our government needs a weaker dollar, but yet they continue to hold this dollar, you know, at this level. And, you know, I'm beginning to read reports about the third quarter, you know, the earnings and everything is, you know, now they're already beginning to, you know, soften expectations of, you know, what the rest of the year is going to be. So why do they keep the dollar as strong as they do? Because it's, as you said, is, you know, it's the item that's unwinding.
Right. Well, this is all part of taking those training wheels off the economy that were put on, obviously, in 2008 to try to prop it up. And there is no delicate, welcome way to do this that makes a win-win situation for everyone. And if you're going to raise rates, you're going to stiffen the dollar, and that's just the way it works. And obviously, I think Trump and his administration are more interested in seeing a weaker dollar, but that's not the way that things are heading, and that's not the way the Fed is working right now. So there are, as I say, conflicting interests. Different people are interested in different relative strengths of the dollar for different reasons. And right now, the strong dollar seems to be the way that things are heading. And that has a lot of implications. And one of them, of course, is what we're starting to see right now in the emerging markets.
You also wrote about Germany's plan for their new payment system, that the Germany's foreign minister is calling for the creation of a new payment system independent of the dollar as a means of rescuing the nuclear deal between Iran and the West that the U.S. withdrew from in May. And I believe we're going to be going to break in about 30 seconds, but if you'd like to start discussing this.
Yes, it's exceptionally important that people understand this because this relates to the international banking sector generally, but I think it's about a much deeper issue about the unseating of America as the central institution of the world order as it's existed since World War II. That is starting to change right now, and this is one of the things, one of the flagpoles that we can use to see which way the wind is blowing.
Well, you know, after 2008, China came out and, you know, they talked about that the U.S. dollar should not be the single reserve currency of the world. So we'll continue talking about this topic and Germany's plan for the new payment system when we return. And we'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Listen to Financial Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with James Corbett. And heading into the break, we were talking about Germany's plan for a new payment system, and you wrote about that in your newsletter.
Yes, I did. So for people who don't know, we're talking about the SWIFT network and its role in international banking. And SWIFT stands for the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication. And basically, the SWIFT network is a network that they run that most banks in the world use for cross-border financial communications, even domestic financial communications, but specifically cross-border settlement and transactions. And basically, it's just a standardized system for coding and relaying messages so that they can settle transactions internationally. So, long story short, if you're a bank in the modern world and you want to be connected to the outside world, you have to pretty much be on the SWIFT network. As the Iranian banks found out back in 2012, back when a previous round of U.S. sanctions delisted, well, basically pressured the EU to put pressure on the SWIFT network to delist those Iranian banks. And how that works is, technically, theoretically, of course, SWIFT is a non-political organization. They're not about politics. They're just a banking telecommunication service. But when push came to shove and Uncle Sam was breathing down the EU Council's neck, the EU Council passed a resolution basically saying SWIFT network had to ban these Iranian banks from their network. And so SWIFT said, well, what can we do? And so they delisted those banks and caused even sharper pain in the Iranian economy. Well, fast forward to 2018, and of course, all these sanctions are snapping back in place. And now Uncle Sam is telling the SWIFT network, you better delist those Iranian banks that we have on the sanctions list by November 4th, or we will start to sanction your board members individually and their financial institutions. Now, that's a pretty big step. And so the German, I believe it was the foreign minister, Heiko Maas, came out in an editorial for a German newspaper saying, we need to strengthen European autonomy by establishing payment channels that are independent of the U.S. and creating a European Monetary Fund and building up an independent SWIFT system. So basically Germany saying, look, U.S. has too much power here, and if they can just delist people from the SWIFT network at will, and this is too much power, we need to start our own. A pretty significant step for a erstwhile U.S. ally who is now starting to not look quite so much like an ally. And of course, this all relates to the EU trying to stand up to these Iranian sanctions and trying to carve out their own path. To whatever extent they're successful with that, a lot of European corporations have already said, well, we're going to pull out of Iran anyway, regardless of what the EU wants us to do, because our bread is buttered more in America than it is in Iran, and we're not going to jeopardize that. So you have France's Total and others basically unwinding their any sort of business deals they had in Iran. But now the EU is basically saying, well, we're going to open up an independent SWIFT system or network in order to go around these U.S. sanctions. I think the deeper point here is that This goes to really the heart of the international banking system and how it's another one of those institutions that undergirds the post-World War II American-led world order, where the IMF, the World Bank, the SWIFT network, these types of institutions are largely dominated by America and its allies and have largely served to be the things that grease the skids of international trade and finance and banking for several decades, and they are now under attack. It's not just the SWIFT network, which, by the way, it's not just the EU talking about creating some independent SWIFT. China and Russia have already created their own independent SWIFT-like networks, which you got to put in quotation marks because it turns out the Chinese version of that new independent SWIFT alternative actually went immediately to the SWIFT network and signed a memorandum of understanding to use the SWIFT network to carry their messages, their transactions. So the SWIFT alternative actually uses the SWIFT network.
SWIFT.
Wrap your mind around that. And then the Russian version of this, called SPFS, is pronounced operational and is meant for actually Russian banks in Russia to basically transact with each other and transmit information to each other rather than internationally. But even then, the internal Russian reports from the Russian government have said it's a slow, cumbersome, costly system. Most banks don't want to use it. The only way they'll ever use it is if they're forced to. So there isn't much of an alternative at this point, but at least there is lip service towards creating this alternative. And I think that's what this is about. This is about the BRICS bank and the IMF special drawing rights and the SWIFT network and all of these different ways that the undermining of the U.S. dollar and U.S. economy and U.S. banking dominance is being challenged. But I put challenge in quotation marks because this always comes down to, okay, so you create an independent banking transaction network, independent in quotation marks, however independent it is, you know, it might use SWIFT in the end anyway just to do its communications. But even if it is a genuine challenge or alternative, it's still very carefully circumscribed within the overall bankster network. I mean, look at the SWIFT board members that are being threatened with these sanctions, and it includes people sitting on the boards of Citibank and JP Morgan and these types of institutions. I don't think Washington is really going to follow through and actually sanction these board members of JP Morgan and Citibank and these other major banksters, because they run the show. They call the shots, and I think everyone knows that. So so this speaks to a bigger transition that's happening. The sort of the big grand narrative for the 21st century is going to be all the ways that China and whoever else stands up to the U.S. and changes the game. But it's still a game that's controlled by and for and for the benefit of the banksters. They're still the ones behind all of this. So it's just a question of, you know, changing the face of the oligarchy, but not changing its nature. And this plays into the grander narrative that I've been talking about quite a lot. The 21st century, yeah, we are meant to see the eclipse of America, the if not the death of the United States, at least the sort of downfall of the American empire and the replacement by some sort of multilateral Chinese-led BRICS world order or whatever it turns out to be. But I still think it's a rigged and controlled game.
A new writing of the monetary order of the world, and just like we had our Bretton Woods, and you know, they'll create another monetary system. But you know, none of these countries can stand independent, as you just explained, with creating their own quote unquote SWIFT programs. You'd think that maybe they'd come together and create one. I mean, where you would have Russia, you would have China, you would have the EU, or is there just too much difference between these countries that...
There have been talks of cooperation in various ways, not apparently on this SWIFT network idea, and I think that is interesting, as you say, because clearly they're all trying to do the same thing. Why are they all trying to reinvent the wheel rather than just coming together on this particular issue? Is it because everyone wants to be the ones that are ultimately the power that get to decide and delist people on their own? You know, if they want to, they can choose to sanction this or that. I mean, I think everyone wants to be the ones in the driver's seat, so no one wants to give up that power. Again, I think the larger narrative will eventually be that sort of alliance in some way. It'll be a Eurasian alliance against the United States, and that'll include Europe, it'll include China, and it'll include Russia and Iran and whoever else finds themselves in NATO's crosshairs. And that's just kind of the inevitable playing out of this situation. It's just a question of how long from here to there.
But wouldn't these, for them to create a program like this, wouldn't the systems have to be purged first? I mean, they just can't come in today's world with the amount of debt that all these countries have,
right,
and so forth. Wouldn't there have to be a major reset, adjustment, purging, whatever you want to call it, in order
in
to...
In a way, that is happening, actually. Because the last time we were talking about China and moving into Africa and all of that, and I find it interesting, a few weeks after I wrote that editorial, now that is big mainstream news, and they're talking about China's neocolonialism. So clearly, this is a popping issue. But the one of the parts of that issue is that it's kind of been presented in a, when it's glossed over as, oh, you know, China's throwing these billions of dollars around and it's all just money from heaven and everyone's win-win. When in reality, no, it's really just a duplication of the old system. But instead of the World Bank and the IMF coming in with their loan sharking plans to get everyone hooked on debt and then to pull the rug out, now it's China essentially doing the same thing. All of these projects, these multi-billion dollar infrastructure projects that are taking place in Africa and Europe and Eurasia and elsewhere, are being done through long-term loans, long-term low-interest loans. Don't worry, guys, everything's okay. But, oh, yeah, when you default on your payments, we're going to take over your deep-sea port, like in Sri Lanka. And that is happening with greater frequency, and I think we're going to see that as an emerging narrative over the next several years. So as it turns out, yeah, the system is going to be almost identical to the old system. It's just, a question of what nationality is running it. And it's the same thing, though, as the World Bank and IMF have been doing for decades.
The other day, J.P. Morgan Chase official said that the social unrest precipitated by a lack of liquidity in the financial markets due to automated trading strategies could highlight the next financial crisis. President Trump said that if the Republicans couldn't hold their positions in D.C., that there would be social unrest. Democrats, I mean, they've been trying to, they've been unresting, you know, since the election of 2016. So now we have a J.P. Morgan Chase official saying that the social unrest is coming. And he says that the rise of the lightning-fast computerized trading has changed the market landscape, allowing for firms to execute trades at unprecedented levels of speed and efficiency. We talk about flash crashes, the sudden sell-off of securities that causes the asset to decline rapidly. We've seen 1,600-point drops. We've seen 1,100-point declines in, you know, 2015 and so forth. How do you see when this begins and we see with this computer trading, they've been able to keep the markets to some degree from reacting to any type of bad news, good news, or indifferent news? How do you see that? Should we pay any attention to this guy?
Well, that is interesting, actually, because, of course, we've talked about the growing social anxiety and unrest and the growing conditions for some sort of civil war scenario and all of that being amped up and played up at this time. And I think everyone can feel that in various ways, the growing politicization and polarization of society. But it's interesting to see the J.P. Morgan angle on that. I hadn't seen that story, but they're pointing to the growing use of automation in trading as some sort of factor in that. I don't see that at all. In fact, that's one of the excluded things when we talk about, oh, you know, new record high on the S&P or on the Dow Jones, is the fact that the actual participation of the average worker, the average person in the stock markets is at probably one of its lowest rates ever. It was just a couple of years ago I was reading that less than 50% of Americans are now invested in the stock market in any form, which clearly means that, yeah, when all these record levels and all of this, a lot of it is done institutionally through institutional traders and, yeah, more and more by bots, basically trading algorithmically. So it's such a level of abstraction from the actual lived experience of most people that the only way that has any effect is the knock-on effect. Oh, equities are taking a hit, therefore corporations are suffering, therefore they're going to cut jobs, therefore the average worker is going to be affected. But it's several orders deep. So I I don't really see the connection between automation in the trading space and social unrest, but I certainly do see the overall narrative of social unrest and civil war 2.0 or whatever they want to call it amping up right now, and I think that is part of the division, the old divide and conquer tactic that's being used on society right now for the same purpose as it always is, basically to prop up and facilitate the actions of the deep state that has always existed and presumably always will. And that's why we see, I think specifically, the main establishment-approved, mainstream-promoted narrative for, at least for people on the left and people on the right who are part of the quote-unquote resistance, is that, don't worry, guys, the deep state is good. They're taking care of you. You know, the good, honorable people in the FBI and whatever are going to bring Trump and the administration to justice, and that's who you've got to be rooting for. And look, oh, these intelligence agencies are telling us it's the Russians. And so now there's this big trust that's being placed in intelligence agencies. And on the flip side of that coin, you have a lot of the Trump people caught up in this Q phenomenon. Don't worry, guys, there are good guys in the NSA and military intelligence who are cleaning up the deep state, and they're gonna save us. The overall narrative for everyone is, don't worry, guys, the intelligence agencies are there and they're hard at work. So it's interesting that becomes the overriding narrative. But how much that has to do with algorithmic trading, I think that's several levels of abstraction deep.
There's been $21 trillion that has been reported missing. There was Ron Kirby, he's a macroeconomic analyst, and he said that the big elephant in the global financial room that no one is acknowledging is the missing $21 trillion from the U.S. Department of Defense and Housing and Urban Development. Have you heard about this $21 trillion?
I certainly have, and it's always a question of what do they mean by missing? I mean, is it just transactions that they can't account for or what have you? Because $21 trillion obviously is more than the GDP of the entire country. It's a staggering figure. So what does it really mean? But one thing I do know is that this fall, November 2018, the Pentagon is expected to actually announce the results of its audit for the first time in decades. They're trying to really get to the bottom of this budget problem. So I'm not holding my breath for any, you know, real deep state revelations, but it'll be interesting to see what they come up with there anyway.
I didn't mean to giggle there, but, you know, it will be interesting. But, you know, when I know during the crisis in 2011, the government did lend out over $16 trillion to European banks and to corporations and so forth. And, you know, some say, and that's close to $21 trillion, and, you know, that was back in the 20, you know, so, you know, to say you're right, and when did they pay it back and so forth? Is it actually missing and so forth? But it's interesting, and that sure is a heck of a lot of money. But anyway,
staggering.
Yes. Thank you, James. I really enjoy our conversation, and I'm looking forward to the next one already. Again, thank you for joining me, ladies and gentlemen. Also, thank you for joining me and or us, and we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
That's too bad.